Welcome to War Gaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. War Gaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 138. That's right, 138. Australian Wargaming with Joshua Shoebridge. So as you can guess by the title of today's episode, I have a very special guest here with me all the way from Australia. We had a little bit of scheduling trying to do to make sure that this worked with all those time zones. So I am, of course, referring to Mr. Joshua Shoebridge here, who is the host of the Hobby Desk podcast. Joshua, how are you today?
I am bloody cold, but I'm actually quite good. you're right about everything, because it's just one of the, okay, I'm going to do something at this time, and family and other commitments come up, you're like, oh, that sucks. We'll have to move it. So thank you for being able to shift the show back an hour, which has been great because I was able to have an experience with my two older boys because of it, which is really cool. So thank you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And I got to say, you know, if we tried to do this like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, it would have been so much more difficult, in part because, and this is going to sound really dumb, but I'm awful when it comes to trying to figure out what time it is somewhere else in the world. So I was able to just put in your location into Google and say, what time is it there? And then it would tell me the time. I'd be like, oh, okay, there we go. So let's, like 10 years ago, I'd be like, I don't know, like how many time zones and is my math right? I don't know.
Well, the way I worked it out is I used to date a girl from Florida, and when she moved back to the States, it was, so she's, I was assuming Massachusetts go straight down, same time zone. So it was, okay, during non-daylight savings time here, it is 2 hours, it's minus 2 hours at the other end of the day. And it's in my head. Other people probably look at me like you're an idiot, but yeah. It works.
Well, it's funny because like here in the States, not everywhere acknowledges daylight savings time. So even though like 99% of the country does, there are pockets here and there. And once, many moons ago, I did an episode of Geeks Explicitly where the guests were from one of those zones that don't acknowledge it. And I think we were in daylight savings time. So I kept on giving them a time and they're like, are you sure this is the time? And without realizing that they were, they didn't acknowledge it. So it's kind of an archaic thing anyway.
Well, when I was growing up and I was living in Tasmania, there was a time where not all of the states lined up. So it's like go further north to Queensland. And you work your way to New South Wales, Victoria, and then you got Tassie. It was New South Wales hit daylight saving. They did an hour and a half ahead of what we were. And Victoria, it was the same, but Queensland didn't have it. So when you wanted to watch something on TV, which is based out of Sydney, they tried to make it so it worked for Queensland and New South Wales. And it didn't work for us. So like to watch anything, like you'd get up in the morning getting ready to go to school, expecting to watch Power Rangers. And then you're watching the Melbourne Cup tennis, which is supposed to finish at 6 o'clock in the morning. You'd be quite bored while trying to eat your breakfast.
So in addition to, and we'll talk about, the Hobby Desk podcast later on, but in addition to doing that, let me see if I get this right. You are, according to my notes, the president of the Marimbula Wargaming Society. I'm sure you're going to correct me on the pronunciation. And a former radio presenter of the Brink radio show for the Edge Radio down in Australia. Did I get it?
That is correct. I was the a co-host for the Brink. I was actually, that was the first ever time I got behind a microphone was the Brink. And it started with it was my best mate. Ben Waterworth, who he hosts a podcast called Survivor Oz at the moment. Now, when we get into podcasts, we'll talk about that. But, he and I started doing radio straight out of year 11. So we were doing a course in year 11, on sports journalism. And then that went in, we did an hour of radio training at Edge Radio, which was a community radio station in Hobart. And we did that for 3 weeks on a Wednesday for an hour after school. And we got asked to do the school holidays. And we thought, yeah, we'll do that. And then we just kept going. But a funny story though, on the first ever episode of the show, we'd been given the training. Here's how you run your prompters. Here's how you run your faders and everything. And the computer at the time, it would play the song, and then once the song had played, it'd disappear off your screen. You had to go look for it if you wanted to back announce it if you didn't write it down. So I've hit the button, I've gone, welcome back to the Elizabeth College Schoolies Hour. That song was, and it was like a minute of silence. And I'm looking at Ben across the table. What was the song? I don't know. And here's another song. Hit the play button, and we're just looking at each other like, well, that went well.
That's so great.
But it's, the show evolved from there. Like, Ben and I are complete polar opposites when it comes to pretty much everything except for, entertainment. We like the same stuff when it comes to video games, movies and whatnot, except he doesn't like Lord of the Rings, which is kind of sad. But like as you know, I'm a Mormon. He would say he's a follower of Ferrari because he's a Formula One fanatic. I'm a conservative, but in Australia, they're known as the Liberal Party, which is kind of weird for you guys. And he's a Labour Party, which would be Democratic. No, that would be Liberal for you guys. So, which is kind of like, we're just complete polar opposites, but at the end of the day, we're really good mates. And that show evolved to the point where we were a breakfast show. So we did Monday to Friday and we just talked about absolute anything. We had the opportunity to announce some amazing news as it happened. The biggest one for me was Michael Jackson's death. We were on air, like we got the notes saying he's gone to the hospital. He's not responsive. He's died. And that was an interesting show for us all. I particularly didn't Jackson fan, but Ben was in tears because he was big fanatic, saying that he also loves Kylie Minogue. You probably don't know who Kylie Minogue is. Do you?
I've seen her on an episode of The Vicar of Dibley. I'm a big BBC fan. Here in New England, that's one of the unusual things. I don't know, your wife might be more familiar with this, but with the TV show Downton Abbey, in the States, it's popular, right? But it's most popular in Seattle and in Boston. For some reason, in New England and the other side of the country, right there, exact like opposites of the country, we just love it. And BBC stuff in general, British things, I can't explain it, but it is what it is.
That's fine. I'm the same. We had a big sporting event on Wednesday night called the State of Origin. It's our version of like your All-Stars games, best out of three. And I was watching it with Thomas Heffernan, who he's another member of the podcast team essentially. And we were talking about bolt action minis and how they brought out a Dad's Army set. And we were talking about how, like, cause we both watched Dad's Army, thought it was funny. And I made the comment that someone's, I don't know who is a manufacturer out there who is in the works of bringing out a set of minis in 28mm for World War One for Blackadder Goes Forth. I don't know if you've ever seen Blackadder with Rowan Atkinson, but it's going to be a very interesting little set with, Blackadder and Baldrick, Captain Darling and all those sorts of things. It's going to be interesting. But he didn't know what it was.
The finale for season 4, I think, is one of the saddest moments on television. I don't want to ruin it for anyone who's never seen it, because even though it's old, there are people who haven't seen it. So anyone who has it, it's on Netflix, I think. So you got to watch it on Netflix. It's sad. I'm not ashamed to say that. Like, I sat there and I cried and I was like, oh my God, what? And I'm like, give me a tissue. I was just like, oh no.
That's what war was like though. Like, they handed up a lot, for that season. But at the end of the day, that's essentially what the Brits did. They had a hierarchy in their army, which was mostly aristocracy, that they knew nothing about war. They just thought, oh, we want to have dinner in France. Well, let's just send the boys forth and we'll get there before Thursday. That's, we saw that a lot when it came to Gallipoli, landing there, like that's a big thing for us here in Australia is the Annings, where all of the hierarchy were mostly Brits and they were leading a bunch of Aussies. But saying that, there was an incident in France where the Brits did the push, but the Aussies went over the fence 2 hours before and already taken two trenches ahead before they even left over the top.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of people don't like to war game World War One because of this kind of stuff. And they think of the Western Front and how it's boring and you're in the trenches and like, what are you going to do? But recently when I was at HuzzaCon up in Maine, there was this fantastic table that was done. I think it won an award actually at the convention, and it was World War One trench warfare. It was simply beautiful. They had rigged it up with LEDs and things and sound. So it really, it was supposed to be a night fight. It felt like you were at night and you had to go over the top and get into the trenches. And it was just, it was one of the most beautiful tables I've ever seen at a New England convention. And it was gorgeous. Down in Australia, you're doing a lot with wargaming with the Marimbula Wargaming Society. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'll correct you. It's Marimbula is how it's pronounced. There's a lot of words that we say that are really difficult for anyone else to really say it. It's just part of being an Aussie, I suppose. Like, we've got an animal called a wallaby, for crying out loud. But, we're doing a lot. At the moment, we've got three main games that are happening at club. We have club weekly now. And essentially we've got Warhammer Fantasy. That's the big one at the moment. A lot of the members play Warhammer Fantasy exclusively. And then there's Warhammer 40K. There's a narrative campaign going on there at the moment. And I get dragged in with my Necrons to play an NPC for certain areas and that. And then for myself in the last few weeks, I've been taking a lot of time in doing World War II in Flames of War by Battlefront Minis. And what we've found is me and another friend Nathan, we've both gone, we've just learning essentially. Like we haven't played the game that much. We've had three games so far and we're picking up little bits and pieces. And I think the way we've doing it, we've gone, all right, the first game and the second game was let's do D-Day. And we got to learn the rules that they did for D-Day. And I tell you what, if you get a chance, you can find their rules on their website. And they're amazing. Like you're thinking, like I've got my army and it's on the beach. And Nathan's going, they're not going to survive the first turn. And then there's a rule at the start for a barrage of artillery from the naval ships that you just go through each team, not each platoon, each individual team. And you roll. If you roll a three, they're hit and they've got to take their saves or they'd gone. He lost a quarter of his force in the first turn. Not before the first turn. It was something happens right at the start of the game. It's how interesting the Flames of War works is for me. That's why I've been quite interested in it for the past 2 months now that I've gotten back into World War II gaming.
I wondered if you were going to mention Flames of War because I know Games Workshop is pretty large throughout the English-speaking wargaming world, but whereas Battlefront is based basically next door over in New Zealand, I had always been under the impression, and perhaps falsely, that it was huge not only in New Zealand but also in Australia. And so with all the stuff that I've seen on the Hobby Desk Facebook page and on your social media, a lot of it's been like GW stuff, and so I hadn't really seen any Flames of War things mentioned. And then when you started listing off like how everyone at the club plays fantasy number one and then 40K with the narrative campaign two. So I didn't know if you were going to say anything about Flames of War because it's been around a while and it's popular, but not as popular as I guess it's particularly of interest to those of a certain mindset. It for people who enjoy playing like tournaments and that sort of things is where I've noticed it to be huge, really. And for people who are more casual, such as myself, in their gaming, it doesn't seem to have caught on.
Well, no, what I have noticed when it comes to, as a gamer, I was introduced, like most people, into wargaming in Warhammer 40K. That's what got me into it. Tau was my first army. And during high, like, as you go through phases when you're a teenager, you go loving it, not being phased, and then, but I'd always, like, before I started Warhammer 40k, I collected one to 1200 scale, I'll say that, 1 to 1200 scale minis, and they're all naval ships. And there was one thing that I really enjoyed doing was, building these World War II boats, and that was model building for me. And when I got through college, and then I discovered Flames of War, and I never bought anything from Flames of War until, was it 3 or 4 years ago? First thing I ever bought for a World War II army was the War British Mortar Company. And then it just went from there. And a few years ago, we were in, wife and I were, we went to Washington DC, but only awesome. And there's a few hobby stores that I'm very familiar with. And it was my birthday. So I bought the Open Fire box set, and that for me sold the game. And it's just, and when you learning wargaming, getting past the G-dub stuff is so important, because there are so many more things out there. As you've got Mantic Games, they pump out some fantastic stuff. You've got Fantasy Flight. Who makes such a better Star Wars game than Fantasy Flight? They've got Armada, X-Wing, Imperial Assault, plus all their RPGs that they've got. There's so much more than just G-dub. And saying that, actually, just saying that, all of these, like, you got Warlord games, all the people who made Warhammer and Warhammer 40k amazing back in the day, they're the ones who run these new companies now. So that's something that I picked up on. I thought, if they're making it, then why not get a quality game and branch out, make your field a bit more diverse?
You raise an interesting point, and the more that I've talked about my origin story, so to speak, way back on episode 93 of the show, Aaron
Bostrick. Remember that show.
Yeah. And so I did the whole, like, I started with GW and I did 40k. Well, actually, I started simultaneously with 40k, BFG, and Necromunda, because, like, I don't feel that old, but I guess I'm old, right? And so, like, that's how I started. But I remember getting into Flames of War, and I'm buying the rule books way back, very first edition. And then, as anyone who's listened to the show a long time knows, I'm not someone who's really into the whole assembly painting side of things, so doing that takes forever. And so I bought all this stuff, and it took me a really, really long time, but I never actually played Flames of War. And then they were like, oh, we're going to redo the rules. And I was all, what? You're going to what? Wait, you're going to pull a GW? And so then they just irritated the crap out of me, is really what it was when they did that. But I knew I wanted to do historicals, and it wasn't until, what was it, 2010, I guess, 2009, when a former co-host, Tom Barbalay, had brought up Black Powder as this great new rule set. And he's like, oh, yeah, the people from Games Workshop have done it. And that's when I really became to realize that, I'm going to call them superstars, but the GW superstars from the design team and the rules makers and everything from back in the day, Rick Priestley, Alessio Cavatore, all of them, that their interest wasn't in sci-fi fantasy. Their interest was and still is in historicals, in having those massive armies of stuff. They got their start with Airfix, huge way back in the day in the UK. And so when, I've told this story a million times, but when I wanted to get started with Black Powder, it's not easy to make the jump, because they've done a really good job with the book and with the rules and with the expansions and with Hail Caesar and so forth. But I think it's a really steep incline going from someone with that Games Workshop background, that Flames of War background, where everything's all points and lists and this is how it is and tournaments and so forth, and then going to the other side with something that's so open and so relaxed as Black Powder or Hail Caesar. So I had no idea what to do, and I gotta tell you, I would not be doing historical gaming today if it wasn't for the help that I got from Henry Hyde of Battle Games Now, Miniature War Games with Battle Games Magazine. I literally sent him an email. I was like, so what do I do? And to his credit, he took the time and he could have been like, this kid from America is stupid and I have a magazine to do. And, but instead he was like, I'm going to answer his question and I'm going to do what I can and try to set him straight. And a godsend. And so I credit Henry with everything that I've done since that moment.
So, I tell you what, that's the big thing. Like it takes you out of your comfort zone. And what I tell people who are edging on that, getting away from G-Dub, go to something like Kings of War or something like that, I remind them that G-Dub did not start wargaming and they are not going to be the ones to finish it. I think the Orwell's Wars, and I thought, and I've not had the chance to read it, but I have read the Wikipedia page and that's enough for me at the moment.
It's worth getting Little Wars because I believe from both Amazon and Barnes & Noble, you can get the ebook for free because it's in, at least in the U.S. anyway, it's in the public domain. And I believe it's, you know, out for freely available throughout the rest of the world. So if you head on over to wargamingrecon.com/Amazon and do a search, you can find it, or over at barnesandnoble.com. Although I don't know if Barnes & Noble's international. I'm not really sure about that. But
it's not.
Amazon anyway. Try getting you were saying before we started about your Amazon difficulties in Australia. I'm going to presume that digital content is okay though, that you should
no, get. That's the thing. It's not.
Wait, you can't even get an Amazon ebook? What?
No. It's more of the fact that, all right. Here's a good example. iTunes. We all know what iTunes is. I went looking for Terminator 2. Amazing movie. Who's not a fan of Arnie being the Terminator? You cannot get it in the Australian iTunes library. It does not exist. But if I had an American credit card, I could get it on there. Same thing happens with everything else.
Oh, licensing. And you know, speaking of licensing, that comes into play with a lot of war games, actually, because way, way back, this really popular role-playing game manufacturer, Mongoose Publishing, wanted to do their very first miniatures game. And they wanted to base it off Starship Troopers. Fantastic film. Paul Verhoeven, of course, people know the original novel, which is very different from the movie. But they had some trouble at first getting the IP, and then they did. And, I mean, things didn't work out. But you never really can tell when you're going to get the rights to stuff. And I think that's actually one of the reasons why Games Workshop did what it did, because they started, there was this great article online I read where they had started with Dungeons & Dragons. They were a D&D seller and they wanted to make stuff for D&D and they couldn't. So they went their own way, and that's how Fantasy started. They said, we're going to do our own IP. This way we have our own ownership of it. We don't have to ask permission from other people. And I mean, lo and behold, many years later, they basically sold their soul for Lord of the Rings, which is another topic for another show entirely. But it goes to show you the importance of intellectual property and just having the rights to stuff. So like when your club is playing Fantasy, there's a reason to it. And a reason why Fantasy is so popular is GW's done, and I'm very, very critical of Games Workshop, but they've done really well with building up the mythos of the properties that they have and the ones that they've created. And I know there's big change coming ahead. And actually, do you anticipate that the what are they calling it, the end times or whatever it is that going to have some sort of impact on what the club tends to play? Do you think there'll be a die-off of Games Workshop games and maybe more transition into Flames of War or other stuff, Mantic or whatever?
I think what I see with this particular thing, with everything coming with G-Dub, is a lot of people are ticked. They're not happy with the fact that round bases are going to be a standard in Fantasy. They're not happy that it's going to go from being a battalion-based sort of game to a skirmish game. Like with it, there are rule sets for it, for when it wants to be played, but people want to play the edition that's current. What I think would happen is that you'll have players who will refuse to move forward because they don't play tournaments, so they don't need to worry about G-Dub hammering out the rule, like the rules that they have for playing the game. And I tell you what, if we were playing it that way at club, I wouldn't be playing half my army. I've got a lot of my armies not painted correctly yet. And I've also got a handmade, Casket of Souls, which I should probably, made it from scratch because I couldn't be bothered paying $100 just for one miniature.
That's awful.
I know.
I can't believe they're... Okay, people always complain about price of stuff, no matter what it is. Like, milk just went up, and I'm like, how much for milk? For a gallon of milk? That's ridiculous. But $100 for a casket of souls? I mean, come on.
Yeah, $96 is how much it's costing us from the Games Workshop website.
That's ridiculous. It's stupid.
But, so, and that's like, when you're, that's where I go back to something I learned from Beasts of War. Warren Johnson, he's one of the head guys down at Beasts of War in Northern Ireland. And he said something back in the day. This is when 6th edition Warhammer 40k rulebook came out. And on unboxing more of an early morning review of the subject. And he goes, don't let the rules get in the way. Remember, you game between the lines. That's what it's a hobby. And if you don't have a mini, make the mini. If you can't afford the mini, make the mini. And that was back when they were with Wayland Games. I think it was Wayland Games. Could be wrong. But, and then it wasn't long after that they got served a pretty, I think it was the infamous cease and desist letter that forced Beasts of War to end their partnership with Wayland. And a lot of the things at G-Dub doesn't just affect the players. It affects those who are retailers of it. It affects those who report on it. Like, if you say a wrong thing about G-Dub in an official news post, you can get a letter from their lawyers quick smart. And I made the assumption, and I was saying this in passing to a friend of mine, that the fact that they've just had a change of CEOs, hopefully we'll see a change in their mentality towards their customers, essentially.
That would be really good. I'm not going to hold my breath or anything about it, but that would be really good. I want to go back to quoted from Warren Johnson, though, because I think it really pertains to the topic I'm most interested about us discussing today, and that is that you're a wargamer, but you're a father, too. And
yes.
So as I now know, as a dad of a little one, although a different situation than you, kids take up a lot of money, right? And they take up a lot of space. Like, they don't themselves, but their stuff does. And so it's hard to find the resources in which to wargame, whether it's time, money, materials, or whatever. So I think it's a great thing that instead of spending like $100 on that casket of souls, you said, forget it. I'm going to make my own and I'm going to do it. And you're able to game. It's not like, oh, you need to have the whatever. You're able to have fun. You're able to game. And it's a way that you can do that. And then you can put that money towards something else.
Oh, that's exactly right. Like, you hit the nail right on the head there. It's like my oldest stepson, he loves war. He's a typical boy who likes playing with toy soldiers. I taught them a very basic rule set about 2 years ago. And the next day, my wife and him and his younger brother on the floor of their bedroom with the dinosaur toys out, making up their own rules going along. They pestered us to buy them some dice so they can do it all. And it's one of unfortunately, the relationship that I have with Dominic is not the greatest. And that's dolls down to step parenting and all that. It's difficult stuff. But one of the things that we're doing is I've set up a permanent table out in our shed to have, one turn after we say our family prayers, and this table's going to be set up and it's going to be permanent. No matter what's happened in the day, we're going to have this time, say 20 minutes each day, you're going to move your guys, I'm going to move my guys, I'm going to shoot each other, and then you're going to go to bed. And that's how important something like that is, because it's wargaming is not just about sitting in a corner like the Phantom of the Opera, painting your minis and just being locked away. It's about getting out there and being social, developing social skills, developing the opportunity to look someone in the eye and have a decent conversation with them, and having a little bit of respect for other people, and then building relationships and bonding with people. How often do you see grown men get excited on a roll of a 5 on a dice? Seriously, that's just something that's, your true colors come out in a positive way around wargaming, in my opinion.
Well, I'm laughing because I'm just thinking back to when I was at Huzzah. Wargamers who are into historicals tend to be an older demographic. I am usually one of the youngest people there, and I'm in my early 30s. So I'm usually gaming with a lot of 60-year-olds or older, really. And you're right. It's funny. Like, you'll walk around and you're playing a game, and someone gets that role that they need, or just something cool happens, and you'll see this, like, 64-year-old guy just revert to being 14 again. And it's beautiful, actually, to see this and to participate in it and to have that fun experience. And for me, anyway, it just kind of goes to show that, you know, age is really more a mindset than a physical reality. And of course, our bodies, as we get older, they fall apart because, you know, things wear out the more you use them. But it's awesome. And of course, when you get to be of that age, chances are a lot of these guys, they have kids, and their kids are the kids probably around my age and your age. And, I get really interested in this stories, really, on how they have attempted to blend these kind of two sides of their personalities together. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. All too often, I unfortunately hear stories of, and let's face it, wargamers tend to be men, right? Of guys saying, oh, you know, my kid is getting old enough to that point where I can start to introduce them to some of this kind of stuff, doing like what you're doing, a simplified version of things. But all too often, it doesn't end up working out. As a newish father, that's something that it kind of like kicks me in the stomach, because I'm like, oh, you know, there has to be a way, and it doesn't have to be war games per se, but it has to be a way to use this to help bring the family together and use it as a method, really. It's not about the game. It's about the experience and the shared memories.
Well, give me 2 seconds to get this up. There's a new game coming out. I can't remember the name of it. And perfect for introducing little kids into wargaming. I think it's called Portals or something like that. And essentially what it is, your gaming table is your kitchen table, or it's your lounge room floor, the terrain is what's there. So if you've got a coffee cup, or if you've got a vase, or you've got a fruit bowl, that's the terrain. And what it is you've got these little guys, and they portal onto your table, and they've got to get to somewhere, and then you get them off. And that was announced on Beasts of War a few weeks ago, mentioning them a lot. The way I see it, when you're introducing a kid into wargaming, don't go, here, little Johnny, you're only two, here's a space marine. Go, hey, little Johnny, you like Scooby-Doo, let's go get some Scooby-Doo minis and let's start an RPG. And then teach them a basic sort of thing. Or when you're going out on a hike, we call it a bushwalk because we're more manly over here. But when you're going on have little things like, make it, oh, there's a dragon around the corner. What would you do if a dragon happened? Like those little things, they don't have to be straight up, okay, get your las cannon, let's go blow up some bugs. I think a lot of dads need to realize that you're introducing them to a hobby, and that hobby has so many different avenues. Don't just introduce them to your cul-de-sac. Introduce them to the highway. And it's like, Alex is one. So next year is when he gets his first bucket of toy soldiers. That's how I have planned it for him. He's got no hope. He's going to be a geek. I know this because when I take him to my hobby room, he always goes to the tanks. So he wants my tanks. But what I plan to do with him is to find things that he loves and turn it into a game. And that's how I want to do it for any other kids that come through my home. Is that's just what's going to happen, is they're going to introduce into a hobby that is essentially wargaming, but it's going to be what they like.
I think that's a really smart way to do it, too, because I think, like you were alluding to, far too many people get caught up in, well, these are the rules for the game. This is how it was written. This is how it's designed. This is how we have to play. It doesn't matter that you're 2.5. It doesn't matter that you're 87. It doesn't matter what your capabilities are, but this is what you need to do because this is what it says in the book and the book is right. And this is how we're going to do it. Or they just get stuck. They used to, well, this is how I play with all my friends who are my age and have this relative similar, shared experiences when it comes to gaming. And I think it's hard for people because they need to really step back and think, wait a sec, this is a kid. What was I like when I was their age? Let me think, what was I doing? Well, I like to run around. I like to do this. They're not going to sit for hours on end at a table rolling dice and moving things around. They're not going to. And things that are really involved, probably not going to want to spend the time. Like, I feel like I'm talking about myself now because I don't want to sit and play Talisman for 9 hours. It's a great game, but I'm going to lose interest eventually. And if I'm going to lose interest, I bet you a 6-year-old is going to lose interest too. You got to scale it back. Really. One of the things that I think is really cool that some people have been doing, I'm a huge fan of Legos, and there's something called Brick Wars where you war game with Legos. You build stuff out of Lego bricks, or it could be other brick building, you know, systems. And you game with it. And I mean, I'm excited about that. What kid wouldn't love that, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And Lego is such a versatile thing. Like, I've got friends who use it to make castle walls for Lord of the Rings miniature wargaming. I mean, I built the base of my, casket of souls, actually Lego. But, you can do almost anything with anything. And I think that's, like, you were getting at in, I don't remember which episode number it was of Wargaming Recon, but in, the one we were talking about, wargaming on the cheap, and there's just so many options for you. Like, even if you don't, like, you can get the kids and go, all right, here is some color, print off a sheet of just blank Iron Man. What color do you want your Iron Man to be? Here's a couple of textures, go nuts. And you're introducing them into painting them. It's just by getting the color in a bit of paper that'll take them 5 minutes to do, because I'll just go, done. But, yeah, it's interesting what you can use as a dad. Like, you got a lot of tools at your disposal.
Ben Gerber from the Indie Talks podcast, and he's like the head honcho of Trolling the Corner. He's a game designer and he's a dad. He has two daughters and both of them in different ways, but both of them are geeky in the best sense of the word. He created, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, this fantastic game. It's a role-playing game, but it has a wargaming aspect to it. And really, I would say role-playing games are war games, but a different type of war game. And this is really cool what he did because it's for kids in that you are gaming with sock puppets. So you get a sock or you can use a piece of paper. Your sock puppet has X number of points that you can attribute to different things. And the way you tell what it can do is, what does the sock have on it? If the sock has wings, your sock creature can fly. If it has a gun on it, which, I mean, the kid's not gonna, but if it did, it has a gun. if it has fire coming out of the sock mouth, it breathes fire. If it doesn't, it doesn't, right? Whatever the sock has on it, literally has on it, that's what your thing does. And so I think that makes it easy for kids to identify, okay, this is what I see. The sock has, you know, this stuff, right? So that means my guy, my thing, my creature can do these things, and his rules are really clear and simple. And I've never asked him, but I'm going to guess that this kind of stemmed out of just playing with his kids and seeing how they play and thinking, oh, maybe this would be good for my daughters. And if it's good for them, maybe it would be good for other kids. And he has an education background, which is really cool. And I don't even know if it's early childhood ed or just education in general. But I think having that background has helped him be able to relate gaming to a younger audience. And it's hard for, I think those of us who don't have that. Like, I'm a poli-sci history background with, philosophy and religion thrown in. And so for me to be like, so, kids think like, I guess I don't know. without, you know, I don't have that. So I rely on other people to be like, oh, this is a cool idea and that's a cool idea or whatever. And to kind of take that in, like, my own experiences. And I guess, what I'm saying is, I'm like, is this how do you, integrate your wargaming with the kids? You talked about, with the eldest, and I think that's a fantastic idea. Great bonding experience. And again, the memories, he's going to take that with him for years to come.
Well, that's it. There was the current leader of our church. We call him a prophet. His name's Thomas S. Watson. It's very unusual for a member of our church at a young age, when I say young age, around the age of 30, to take up a position within the church where they have what we call a mission president. And they're essentially in charge of 500 missionaries and then a large piece of a continent, essentially. And at this time, he was called as a mission president. He had a baby and he had two other, oh, I could be wrong. I'm not going to put a numeral on that. He had a couple of kids, and there was a thing I was watching, and his son said that one of the fondest memories he had as a kid was every night that his dad would call him into his office, and then they would pull out a checkers set and they would play that for 10 minutes. And that was just my time with dad. And that's essentially what I'm trying to do with Dominic, is just my time with dad. Dad took the time. I don't want to be that dad who didn't take the time. Because my father, I feel that I'm so much my dad, even though I don't like my dad. I do like my dad. I just don't like my dad when I was a teenager. I think a lot of us have that sort of conundrum that go along now. We've grown up, we love our dad, but we didn't like our dad when we were 17 and all that. He collected stamps, or he still collects stamps, and I tell you what, he would just get invested in stamps, and that's all he would do for hours on end, is just sitting there looking at these stamps. And every now and then he would go, because he'd know, I would find it interesting, here's a stamp from 1936, Germany, and a picture of Hitler on it, and it was, for me, that was so cool. And then he'd go, this is a picture of a bird from 1974 in Wichita, Kansas. And I'm thinking, that's boring. I don't want to see that. You're stupid. And the only thing my dad didn't do growing up is he didn't do the time with dad. And we learn, like, if we can learn from other people's mistakes, then that's those mistakes. So I want to have my time with dad with all my kids. They're all going to get it. And because I'm a war gamer and that's my enthusiasm. If I can give that enthusiasm to them, they're going to feel a lot more special as well.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, like when you're growing up and you're a kid and you become a teenager and then you're a young adult and stuff, you have your relationship with your family, with your parents, it changes and it changes for them too, because they're used to you being like this little thing they brought home from the hospital, and they're trying to adapt to that just as you're trying to adapt to it. But I find it really interesting that now that I'm a parent, in many ways, and my parents would, I'm sure they would laugh their heads off if they heard me say this, but in many ways, I feel like I'm becoming my parents. And I think that happens to everyone. And you need to take the things that you liked about what your parents did with you as you were a kid and take those and do those things. And the things that you don't like, I think I don't think you should just like throw them away, but I think you need to take that and improve upon it however you can. Like you're saying, that time with dad stuff is something that you wish you had more of as for yourself. And so like you're implementing that with your children now, and that's fantastic, being able to have that. And that's something, that always meant a lot to me as a kid growing up. Like my dad worked a ton of jobs at the same time. So it was difficult, but he always made that time, to be with me, and my mom stayed at home. So I was always able to be with her and with other family members, and having those strong connections, it is very important, not only at that time, but even later in life, to being able to have those bonds and, to rely on that. And I think people who are into wargaming and guys in general, it's not about the game, right? It's about what it's doing for your kids. And so, yeah, you might get a lot of fun out of, wargaming, whatever it is with your kids. But it doesn't really matter what happens in the game and who wins and who loses. It matters that you took the time, right? And that, hopefully the kids are having fun. If they're not having fun, you're doing something wrong. You got to fix it, change it up somehow.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's like, there's no winners, there's no losers. Because if you do that, then you could really shoot yourself in the foot if you put winners and losers in there. Because if you say that the kids won, then they're going to hang it over you for months and 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 months. And I've been on the receiving end of that, and that's not cool. But if they don't win, then you've got to put up with them. The game's ended. They're depressed. And it's just, it's not a good thing. It's like, you can't go bragging rights because you imagine that, like you beat a 6 year old and you're like, hey dude, I beat my daughter at Warhammer. Hell yeah. That's seriously.
You're awful. Why can't you be good at this game?
I'm a big fan of YouTube and there's a channel on there called Bad Lip Reading. I don't know if you've seen it or not. It's so funny. If you haven't seen it, check it out. If you just need a laugh, but they did this thing where they did, what they do is they take things from say football or movies and they'll block out the actual dialogue and using the movement of the actors' mouths that you're seeing there, they'll go, okay, they could be saying this, and they put it over the top and it's so funny. And they did this one with the Avengers and they called the Redneck Avengers. And there's this one part where Captain America and Tony Stark are there and Tony goes to Captain America. So did you make your grandma lift weights? And he goes, no. And he goes, that sounds like you're disappointed because that's because it's disappointing. And it's talking about how you're expect. And the reason why I bring that is because there's a lot of the time with dads is you may expect something that your child is not capable of. And going back to a show that you did not long ago, was it Five Things Not to Do as to get people into wargaming? And so you've got to take that to the next level with kids. You can't just go, I wouldn't do that. You've got to actually explain to them, you know what, it would be so much better if you just come up the side there. Because if you come up the side, I'm not going to be able to get you. And actually show them and give them reasons to instead of just going, man, you suck. Why can't you do it? Imagine the complexity that the complex that'll get in their heads if you just did that. Like, I wouldn't move that if I were you. Yeah, no, you're stupid. You're a bad parent of the year right there.
I'm laughing not because it's a good thing, but because like I could easily see that being a scene like in a movie where or, like a comedy where someone's just like they're awful, like a bad Santa or something, and they're just like, oh, you're a rotten child. What? You're gonna do what? No, don't do that. Did you ever see the Lego Movie?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
So for me, that's kind of like the, and I it's going to sound dumb, but it's a philosophical debate with Legos. Like, are you supposed to do what it says in the rule book? This is how you build them. And that's the only thing you do. Or can you do whatever the heck you want to do with it? And I think it's perfectly applicable to the discussion we're having right now where
it's the same thing with Warhammer.
Yes.
It's like I was trying to get my wife into doing some hobbying stuff and we were jokingly talking about it. I said, how about you do some paints and miniatures with me? She goes, okay, I'll do it better. And I've gone, how are you going to do it better than me? Because I've been painting for years. You've not touched a miniature ever. She goes, I'm doing it better because they're going to be pink with flowers. And I've just gone, you ain't touching nothing of mine. It's like, you can't do that. But you can do that. There are people who have gone out and they've made differences to their minis. Like I have seen, like, well, the nickname that Ultramarines have are Ultra Smurfs. Correct?
Yep.
I have seen someone who has gone, I'm going to take that to the next degree. They're going to have white hats and go, la, 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 la. And if you can check them out, I'll put them up on my Facebook page. There are people who have made Smurfs for the Ultramarines. I don't know if it's cool or not, but they've done it.
As an 80s kid, I have a huge love for the Smurfs and all things Smurf. So I've never actually seen an actual Smurf Marine, just like all blue. Cause I mean, that's what they are, but this is wonderful.
It's amazing what I have seen just in my travels of what people are. And going back into other gaming systems, the people who produce the miniatures for Saga, there's people who have gone, all right, I'm going to make some conversions. Here we go. We have Game of Thrones. And they've got Game of Thrones miniatures just from simple conversions. And they could have done the same thing with Lord of the Rings miniatures. And there's a 15 mil supplier who pumps out these really cool looking sci-fi, I don't remember what they're called, but they look so cool. Paint them white and black. You got Stormtroopers for Star Wars miniature games there. You can do whatever you want with what you've got. If you want to change something, you can change it to whatever. And I think a lot of people miss that fact. Again, going back to it, gaming between the lines. There is so much you can do. You make it make it yours. That's what it, like, you're buying the miniature. It's your miniature. Do whatever you bloody well want with it. You're buying the rule book. You can decide what you're going to do with that rule book. Are you going to follow it to the nth degree, or are you going to go, all right, or we're going to, let's play a game where everyone has a ballistic skill 4, or let's play a game where it's going to be no armor saves. How interesting would it make a game just to go, all right, let's get rid of this one rule. Let's see what happens.
You mentioned that you were going to try to find the Smurf Marines and post it onto your Facebook page. So
yes.
If listeners would like to stay up to date with all the stuff that you do, how would they find you? Where are you online, and how do they keep up to date with all of the things that you're working on?
Oh, wow. So I've got Twitter, and I've been using that a lot for the podcast. That's @ShubesLive. I think off the top of my head, on Facebook, you can just look for the Hobby Desk for Wargamers, in the pages section. Also, like, just look for Josh Shoebridge as well. Add me to Facebook, talk to me, whatever. I'm on Google Plus as the Hobby Desk. You can email me at thehobbydesk@gmail.com. I'm also on trollitc.com in that little tab that says podcast. Click on that and you'll see the Hobby Desk and go there. They're the main places that I do a lot of my stuff. There is a forum that I'm quite active in, and that's called Wargamer AU Forums, and that's it's a forum section for Australian wargamers. That saying that, there's no geo block. If you're from anywhere in the world, you can get onto this site. There is a great bunch of just things on there for different kind of wargamers, and it's, you can actually find the diversity of wargamers in this forum, because like they have you can look at the first page, you go fantasy, 40k Lord of the Rings. Then they'll go Boston, Flames of War, and then all the way down. And there are more players of these, I like to call them, not secondary games, but alternative games. I think the more elite, this is going to sound really pompous of me, but the elitists of us war games play things that aren't, and actually go, you asked a question before about what would a couple of the members of the Maringula Wargaming Society do if they didn't like the changes in the next fantasy rule set that's going to be coming out soon. And then one of the blokes said, well, I'm going to go into Kings of War. And he goes, the miniatures are cheaper, the rules are a lot simpler, and I can still use half the, like, most of the stuff I've got, because he collects dwarves. And again, there's another thing on cheapness. Buy for $80 a massive Dwarf army from Kings of War. He tried doing the same with any other supplier that we dare not speak its name, because I don't want to get in trouble anymore. But going back to what you were saying, where you can find me, look for Shoebridge the Great on that forum, and also on the forum of Kemri. I'll put the link on the Facebook page. That's a dedicated forum specifically Tomb Kings. I joined that forum mainly because I heavily got into Tomb Kings about 6 months ago, and I have found, like, so I'm one of the, I have to aesthetically like the army before I get into it, and I saw some Tomb King models in a G-Dub store, and I thought, hell yeah, I might get into that, and it's just gone from there, and went from having a few horsemen to now I've got a 2,500 point army. I need some more stuff for it though. I need some Yashapti. That's what I need.
And listeners don't have to worry, because we'll have links in the show notes for this episode as well to the different ways you can keep up with Josh. Show notes can be found at wargamingrecon.com/WR138. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR138. And I know a lot of you like to listen while you're commuting, or you're at the gym or at work or whatever. It's hard to remember all these different links and all that kind of stuff. So the show notes are a great way to easily get everything. You don't have to remember anything else, just that one link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR138. And moving on actually to one of my favorite sections of the show, the mailbag, because I love to hear from all of you, and sometimes former guests send messages, and I like to share all of that with everyone. So we actually have some messages from our Facebook page. We've been talking about social media a little bit lately, and listener Tristan said about episode 137, in which I talked about five great Facebook groups for wargamers, and he wanted to mention a couple that he felt that I had missed. He said Games in Theory for current Games Workshop stuff, Star Trek Attack Wing community is great for the Star Trek Attack Wing game, and Old Hammer for Old School Games Workshop stuff, the Heresy Painting, Horse Heresy Painting and Modeling Group. And he said that Forge World staff appear regularly there, and they give out amazing tips for painting and modeling. So Tristan, I want to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts on those other Facebook groups. There's tons of them out there. And I knew when I did the episode, and when you do just five or something, you're going to leave tons of things out, right? So it's hard to keep up with all of that. And then listener Jamie from Norway, who is a Patreon patron, said, quote, "Lots of work in progress here, but I thought you'd like to see that my auction win last year is starting to get some friends and enemies. These are two, not all models in shot, small muskets and tomahawks forces for recreating Sharp from the book series Fighting in the Peninsula War," unquote. And then he shared a photo, which will be on the Wargaming Recon Facebook page. Thank you, Jamie, for being a patron and for sending this in. And then, of course, he's referring to the Extra Life 24-hour Gamerthon auction that was done last year in 2013. 2014, listener Dave had done on his own, and this year I'm going to be doing one, which will be later in 2015. So that was really cool. And then I just have some announcements to share with everyone as we get near the end of the episode. I want to remind all of you that the show is recorded live. So as I'm talking, Josh is sitting over in Australia listening to me live as we had just been chatting, and you can participate because watching things live is really cool. You get to see it as it happens, but also, there's a chat room too on our live page. If you go to wargamingrecon.com/live, there's a chat room. You can interact with me. You can ask questions and that kind of stuff. Guests can, of course, on their own choose to be in the chat room. So it's a really cool thing to head there.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it's there. Chat room's live 24/7, my friend. It works on mobile. wargamingrecon.com/live. It's right there on the page. It works on mobile devices, so you can be on your smartphone, a tablet. It works everywhere. It's fantastic. It's a special thing that I had our web designer set up, and I'm so excited about it and the possibility of community, that sense of community. Community is a key word.
I'm going to start trolling it, just so you know.
So you head over to wargamingrecon.com/live for the chat room. And then I have a little bit of, it's sad, but it's good too, but some sad news. Unfortunately, our sponsor, 127games.com, has closed shop. So we are now officially without a sponsor. They just wanted to change directions and focus on their main business. 127 Games was always kind of a hobby business for them. But a great venue, and appreciate the many, many years of business relationship that I've been able to have with them and with the owner, Bill Detmers. Wish him nothing but the best. But naturally looking for a new sponsor. Sponsorships help to keep the show going and help me to do things like review games, go to conventions and all that kind of stuff to share that content with you. So if you want to sponsor the show or you know someone who might, please get in touch. You can email me at jonathan@wargamingrecon.com. All of it's in the show notes. But there's some exciting news. I have two new affiliate relationships I want to share. And actually, neither one is not new per se. It's just new that I'm mentioning them. They've been around for a while. The first is we have a special deal for all of you from Wargame Soldiers and Strategy Magazine. You can get a one-year digital subscription for the low price of $16.95 American. That's a whole year of Wargame Soldiers and Strategy digitally. You get it. Works on any sort of mobile device. Works on your computer, whatever. $16.95. You head on over to wargamingrecon.com/WSSdigital. It's a great deal. I love Wargame Soldiers and Strategy. It's a fantastic magazine. I'm going to be doing an episode coming up where I'm going to talk about magazines for wargamers and kind of give an update on some of the ones that I've talked about before. WSNS is, I think, the current best example of how you can succeed with a digital subscription. They're doing it right.
Now, on that, I'd like to agree with that. In all honesty, it's a fantastic magazine, and having a digital subscription to it's a fantastic thing. Sorry to interrupt you there.
John. No. I'm glad you did.
But just saying it for everyone there, in America for $16 American, they get 12 months for digital subscription. These are things you get to keep. They're PDFs, correct?
Yep. You get the PDF. Yeah. You don't have to worry about having physical space on a shelf or something for it. You get it as soon as it comes out. So you don't have to wait for it to come across the ocean or whatever to come to you. You save on postage costs. You save everywhere. And so you're able to maximize your money.
I'm going to tell you now, if you'd be daft if you didn't do it, because, I buy that magazine very regularly and it costs $10 each time I do. So I think I'll be doing that. So definitely just don't be stupid. Do it.
I spend $9 American per print issue whenever I can find it. And so $16.95 for a whole year is amazing. And then the other relationship that we've had this for ages, and I don't know why I've never mentioned it. I guess I'm daft, I guess is what it is.
Sorry.
No. I really, because, it's with Audible. And the reason why I'm saying I'm so dumb is I love to read. I've talked about books a lot on the show, about magazines and everything. And one of the things that I love is I love audiobooks. I am a huge fanatic of audiobooks. I work in a library. And one of the things that I get to do is I get to recommend all sorts of stuff that we should buy to our head reference librarian who buys audiobooks. And so I get to listen to a lot of stuff, but not everything can be gotten through the library. And Audible has over 180,000 different audiobooks. So there's a special deal for listeners of the show. You get your very own free, completely free, no strings attached audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. It costs you nothing. You sign up, you get the audiobook, whatever one you want. They have tons of them, right? And then before the end of the 30 days, if you don't like it, you say, okay, no thanks, I'm done. You like it, you keep on going. It's wargamingrecon.com/audible. Right now, I'm actually listening to the book Becoming Steve Jobs. I really love the Isaacson book about Steve Jobs, and I heard over on another podcast that this was a really good book to read, and I am just absorbed in it. I listen to it on my commute to and from work. It's fantastic, so it's great. And you can get this or other books, whatever you'd like, for free. Do that.
I've done the same thing, and I've been listening to Heir to the Empire. It's the Star Wars novel.
Timothy Zahn, right?
It's fantastic. It's awesome. And I, just before that, I had a very, very small one that it was more of an audio drama, and that was Trials of Asriel, which is based on the, what would you call it? The chapter master of the, Dark Angels.
Yep.
Which, that was also cool. So, and those Steve Jobs books are fantastic as well. I've read them and listened to them. It's an awesome thing. Take it up.
Well, and they,
not with you than with me, but
well, they just, I got really excited because Audible just released a reading of Sun Tzu's The Art of War, read by the guy who plays Littlefinger on Game of Thrones. And there's something about a guy with a Scottish accent reading Sun Tzu that is amazing. I've only heard excerpts.
You'll go to war. It's like listening to flipping, what's his name who played Leonidas in 300? He's like, we're going to be Greek, but we're going to be Scottish too. Freedom!
Only at wargamingrecon.com/audible. You get to pick either any of these. They're all fantastic. Get them free and you get your free 30-day trial. Do you know, a lot of people don't know Audible is an Amazon company. So if you like and if you trust Amazon, you're going to like and love and trust Audible. They're fantastic, and I had a lot of chats with them actually, because I was like, oh, you know, what's a sign up like and what's all of this and that, and so I used their live chat and they were so friendly and helpful, and they explained everything very easily. So if you ever have any trouble, which you won't, but if you ever do, they're amazing. You can't go wrong with these people. They're out of this world is what it is. And then what else do I get for all of you? Oh,
and they don't geo-block.
Very important. So you can be in Australia, you could be in the UK, you could be anywhere, and you can get your Audible book, whatever you happen to choose. And do you know what? If you keep your membership with them, if you go past the free 30-day trial and you're like, oh, I love it, I'm going to keep doing it, it's a low price, and then you get a free book every month, including with your membership, and then you can get buy extra books at a reduced price. You get a discount and then you keep them. They're yours forever to do whatever you want to do with. No DRM, no, none of that. It's yours, which I think is, that's pretty amazing. And then let's talk Patreon actually for a second. I mentioned yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I said something. Did it go funny?
It did go funny.
Okay. No, I was just making fun of how you say yours to keep. We say yours. I'm sorry.
I'm from New England. What do you expect? So, as a thank you to those of you who support us on Patreon, and I know some of you do, I announced last episode that Patreon patrons will get all new episodes of Wargaming Recon before everyone else. So if you're watching this live, this is not a podcast episode. This is raw, and I do cool things to it to make it sound better and everything after the fact. The podcast episode goes to Patreon patrons before anyone else. I can't promise if it's a day or 2 days, but I'm getting it to you before everyone else. So if you don't support us on Patreon, I hope you would. It costs as little as $1 an episode. That's roughly $2 a month, less than what it costs you to buy a cup of coffee for one single day. You can sign up over at wargamingrecon.com/Patreon. And if you like what I do here and you find some value in it, they give it like a tip jar. You're saying, thank you for what you've done and, for the amusement. I mean, it's cheaper than going to the movies, right? To get a whole month's worth of content from Wargaming Recon. It's roughly $2, $1 an episode. And then you get the stuff before everyone else. And let's see, do I have any iTunes reviews for anyone? I do not this time, but you can leave reviews for iTunes and there are links in the show notes to all of that. And then I believe that the last thing I have to tell you is the next episode of Wargaming Recon comes out Monday, July 6th. And like I said, an upcoming episode is going to be talking about magazines and then I have a bunch of guests coming up. You can find out all of that on the episode guide. And of course the live page shows you not only the chat room, which apparently Josh is going to be trolling, but it also has, it lists all the upcoming live events. So, I can tell you that on July 3rd at 2:00, I'm going to be doing a live stream where I talk about magazines. On July 11th, I'm going to have guest Aaron Bostian back. He's going to talk about how you can survive your fully local game store closing. And then on August 22nd, I'm doing a live recording with guest Adrian Benson. We're going to talk about the Naval Thunder War Game, which is really cool. So I know this is a ton of information for you to digest. So don't worry. Show notes, right? Head on over to wargamingrecon.com/WR138 for the show notes. You can get all of this. You can get how to get in touch with Josh. And I got to say, Josh, I have loved having you on. This has been just fantastic, and I can't wait to have you back.
Anytime. We're going to have to do it the other way around next time, though. Yeah. You're going to have to come on my show, and then because that's just how it works. A bit of give and take.
It would be my pleasure to appear on the hobby desk.
That's where it's at. It's the hobby desk.
Although I don't know what I could add, as I don't paint really, and I'm not one who loves to assemble, although I have been working on cleaning up some hat miniature stuff for Hail Caesar, but I suppose I could save talking about that for whenever I end up being on your show.
That's actually not a bad idea, because if we do that, what I would do is I would get Tom, who's the other, my mate who's putting his foot in with it, which is a bit of fun, because he wants to get into Roman wargaming and he doesn't know what he's doing. So maybe you could share your advice on a show. That's an idea for a show coming up right there.
Only on the hobby desk.
You can hear brainstorming. We don't hide anything.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. I know what the time difference is, is pretty late there in Australia. So I appreciate
it. It is 12:15 in the morning.
Well, I think that means that we need to wrap this up so you can get yourself to bed. Sleep.
I'll probably sleep for another hour. Just
well, sleep for parents. Well, for anyone really, but sleep for parents is a precious thing. Whatever you can get, you fall asleep in a corner or whatever it is. So thank you again for coming on the show. And I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. As always, it's a pleasure coming to you and being welcomed by you into your lives. So don't forget, check out the different things that we talked about here on the show. Check out all the stuff that's happening down in Australia, which you can find out from the hobby desk with Joshua here. And no matter how busy you are,
just
yes.
Oh, sorry, I almost interrupted the awesome part of the show. Now, is this just before one of the quick announcement for the, from the hobby desk is next month we're going to be going to Intercon, which is I've explained it before. It's you had your convention that you went to like a few weeks ago. It's the winter one that we have here. We do it twice a year, one in January and then one in July. And we're going to be doing live blogging from there and also some audio podcast recording there as well. If you guys want to know what it's like at a convention in Australia, definitely look and get onto our Troll in the Corner page and or our Facebook page.
Well, I think you should. I've talked about previously about how much I love the Hobby Desk. It's one of my new favorite podcasts to listen to. I can't recommend it enough. So you should definitely check it out over at trollitc.com. And, no matter how busy you are in your life, no matter how many Australian conventions you're going to or how badly you pronounce Australian words like blah, no matter what's going on, you need to make sure that you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Are you a wargamer and want to know what to do when you're an Australian wargamer? Then you need to tune into the Hobby Desk for Australian wargamers. This is a member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network, and we're here to give you the best possible things that Australian wargamers can give to you, the listeners. And I hope you enjoy what we do, because guess what? It's coming more and more often and more awesome for you who listen to the Hobby Desk on the Troll in the Corner podcast network.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.